reference. A special episode of Yelling About Comics, episode 38, in which Carrie and I are sitting in the same room.
What?
And we're not sitting in one of our rooms. We're actually on the gorgeous Riverwalk of San Antonio, which when I think about places that are near and dear to the heart of comics, I think San Antonio really comes to mind.
Does it?
Not even a little bit.
Okay.
No. I mean, you know, think of all the famous comic series that are take place here in San Antonio, like that one with the place and the thing.
Sure, sure. The place.
Wait,
and
am
the
I
thing?
Thinking of my romance novels?
Probably.
I think I just crossed the streams. Anyways, this evening we are talking about our comics we were reading, but more importantly, we're gonna take a step back a couple of weeks and talk about Teen Titans Go to the Movies, which Carrie finally got up off of her butt and went and saw this movie.
Okay, no, hold on a second. This is not fair. First of all, the movie...
This is what an excuse sounds like.
The movie came out when we were on vacation.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Were you a place where they didn't have movie theaters?
We were with my family, and I think it's kind of rude.
What other way to bond with your family than going to see Teen Titans Go to the Movies?
Okay, that would not have gone over very well.
But you guys would have had a great time.
Well, the four of us would have had a blast. We had a great,
right?
And actually, and my oldest son wanted us to do that. They wanted us to go and leave everybody to go to the movie. I'm like, that's not going to work.
We are going to the Teen Titans. Pace!
Yeah, that would not have worked. And then, like, it just finally took to when, you know, settling back from vacation, because as you know, when you come back from vacation, you kind of need a break from the vacation to kind of resettle back in. So I got all that, and finally I was just like, we're going to the movie, like, this certain day. Like, you don't have to come. Of course, the kids are like, well, we're going. I was like, yes, you guys are going. But, you know, Sean, like, we're going. He's like, okay, fine, we'll go. We all had a great time.
It was, so we actually went and saw it, I think we saw it the weekend after it opened, because my daughter, one of the members of her hockey team, actually had a birthday party. They were doing a slumber party in which they went to see the movie, and we're friendly with the parents, and the parents were like, well, you guys have to come and sit with us. We sat in the very back row, well, very far away from the girls, so we wouldn't embarrass them, but we had an amazing time. Mm-hmm. It was, so I went in a little skeptical because I figured one of two things would happen. Either it would be an hour and a half long episode of Teen Titans Go, or it would be 20 minutes of content stretched to an hour and a half movie. And I am happy to say it was the former instead of the latter.
Yeah, that's always one thing that I always get very wary about, because I've seen too many times when a cartoon show that's like, you know, 20, 22 minutes, they try to make like an hour and a half to 2 hour movie, and it has a great premise, but it fails. Because like it's either, like you said, it's got like a little bit of content and it's not working and it's just kind of weak, or it's okay and then the show never recovers from that.
Right.
So, but this one, like you said, it was like a 90 minute Teen Titans Go episode.
In fact, I think actually my daughter said it best when I got out of there. She was like, it was just like binge watching a season. And I was like, yeah, that's actually kind of true. Except it had a common theme.
Right.
To it, like, right?
I was like, well, you know, maybe if the season actually had like an overarching
right, because it's so random. But there were, like, I mean, there were all these references and scenes that sometimes I was like, this is so out of left field. And yet, it worked.
The whole movie, you could really say the whole movie was nothing but a bunch of references.
Oh my god. So first off, I think the thing that delighted me the most was just the insane number of visual references to the DC universe. I mean, the first second that I saw Jonah Hex like walk through, I was like, oh man, okay, I love this. And Swamp Thing was in there. And then there was, at one point, there was a visual gag that I could not stop giggling about. They were in the lobby of the movie theater, and there was a poster with a dinosaur that was missing half of its face, and it said Jonah Rex. Could not stop laughing. Just giggling about it the whole time. It just, they did such a little, like, even if they didn't actually call attention to stuff, just these little visual callbacks of characters that you're like, ah, there's that person, and there's that person, and there's that person.
Oh, yeah.
It was fantastic.
Yeah, because the way it started off was they were all going to go to Batman's new movie. And they get there and they found out that they're not on the list.
That's right. Because they're just not well known.
Not well known. And so, but the challengers of the unknown are on the list. And we'll start right off with, I mean, Raven, she's like, challenge of the unknown? That's really obscure. And, you know, and just kind of started from there because it was like about Robin wanting his own movie. And if you guys keep up with the TV show, the episode that comes directly before this is them trying to make, trying to direct and write and make their own movie. So it leads right into this because they're like, well, we're going to go to see Batman's movie. That's kind of how the episode ends. And then we have this. And, you know, they're having Batman having, you know, future movies like with his sidekicks, and Robin thinks it's going to be him. And first it's Alfred, and then it's the car.
The car.
And, like, your sideboard is like, oh, man, they did the car before you.
But I also liked when they say the previews and they're like, yeah, I'd see that.
Right.
What?
And the utility belt.
That's the one that I think somebody was like, oh, man, Robin.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And so that's how it just kind of started. The basic premise from there is that they want to do what they can to be in a movie because that's what all the greatest heroes are doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, like, they went to go talk to Jade Wilson, who's doing all these movies, and she was like, you know, maybe I would if there wasn't, like, everybody else. And this is where they're like, well, if we could go back in time and become superheroes, we'll get our own movie. I was not prepared for how they handled some of that, especially when, you know, you have the Waynes leaving the theater and they stop them and, like, go down the happy alley.
There's two options before them. There's the crime alley where, like, all of these people are getting mugged and shot and stabbed and it's just mayhem. And then there's, like, an alley where everything's brightly colored and there's rainbows and ice cream. And so they're like, why don't you go down this alley instead? And it was, that part was funny.
But when they realize that by preventing all the heroes from being born, that the world is now in utter chaos, it's like, we have to go change what we've already done. So when they get to the Wayne's part, they stop him from going down the happy alley, turn little Bruce around, and they kick the parents.
The parents down crime alley.
And you see gunshots, and they just kind of pat Bruce on the head. And I was like, oh my god, that is so dark.
Oh my god, it was so dark. But it was really funny, too, at the same time. And, I mean, in that really dark, irreverent kind of way. But that was funny. And then I think the other thing that I really liked within their callback humor was all throughout this, they have Stan Lee making cameos. And my favorite is the first time, right before they go back in time, Stan Lee's, like, sweeping one of the lots, and he's like, I'm Stan Lee. I'm making a cameo. And it just keeps going and going. And, like, the camera starts to pan away. And he runs up and gets in front of the camera. And he's like, I'm Stan Lee. So fucking funny. It was so, oh my gosh.
And, like, you know, if we talked about every single references in this movie, like, we would be here for several.
All night.
Several hours. Because, like we said, like, almost every other thing was a reference. Whether it was a reference to the Teen Titans Go TV show, or to something really deeper into DC lore.
Or even WB, because at one point,
right,
when they're on the lot, Starfire points up to the water tower, and it's like, there's where the Animaniacs live. Which was wonderful.
Right.
I mean, oh my gosh.
Like, of course, the kids were like, well, who is that? It's like, shut up. This is for us. It's not for you.
Yeah.
But it was, and it was such a, the other thing that was such a delight was DC even making fun of itself.
Yes.
In the matter, which to me is like, okay, you guys are really owning up to a lot of this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they even brought in the, you know, the Green Lantern joke when,
yep,
when they're talking to Green Lantern.
Talk about
and they're like, was there a Green Lantern movie? And he's like, yeah, but we don't like to talk about that one. You know, take on what, you know, Ryan Reynolds constantly, you know, poking fun about that. So now they're taking some jabs at it as well. And
they took jabs. Actually, you know, one of the things that I liked that worked, and it was referential humor, but it worked really well, was that they took a lot of jabs at the current state of superhero movies.
Yeah.
Right? So
there's so many of them.
There's so many of them. And they took stabs at themselves. They took stabs at Marvel. I mean, in some of them, it was just really funny because they were doing it, but there was a moment there where I was like, you know, they have a point. You know? It worked really well. So on one hand, they were making all these jokes, but they were also kind of making a point too. And the other reason it worked was that if you think about it, the plot's pretty simple,
mm-hmm.
but it's also very straightforward, much in a Teen Titans fashion, right?
Mm-hmm. And I think, like, we're talking about, like, some of the deeper comic lore references, like, right there, that just really showed me that, you know, Aaron Horvath and Michael Yelenic have been a part of this since back when it was Teen Titans, like, that was their baby,
yep.
and they have carried this forward. So one of the really cool things was I was looking at the credits and saw that they were still the lead writers,
mm-hmm.
and Peter Michael Rita was still one of the big people as well, and he actually has a song in
yeah.
it, which I love when he does his songs. So I really like that they had, like, those original people really part of the writing and
mm-hmm.
part of all of it. Of course, the original voice actors and all that. But when they had all these deep, funny references to lore, it's like, these guys are comic book nerds. Like, they know
yes.
their shit.
They know their shit. Or if they're not. So there's, years ago, South Park did a World of Warcraft episode. And it was one of those things that, as a World of Warcraft fan, you know, we played for 4 years almost. When we watched it, we were like, okay, either these guys play World of Warcraft and they know it, or they knew this was so important, they did their homework. And I can't tell when it came to Teen Titans Go, because some of their visual references and stuff, I can just picture, like, two interns or even the two main guys just sitting there pouring through, like, okay, what do we have to give some homage to, and what do we have to point love to?
Well,
which
right.
is wonderful.
That I mean, that's a possibility, but I think because of the depth, the breadth, and how old some of this stuff was, you're not getting into
it. Some of it was old.
Like, Challengers of the Unknown. Like, I totally forgot that was even a thing.
I forgot that was a thing. Until, like, they popped him up there, and when Raven was like, that's obscure, oh my god, that is what they're talking about.
Yeah.
That shit was crazy.
Yeah, just, like, all of that. You know, because I really do think it is themselves.
I would like to think it is them.
And the reason why is because I don't know if you saw the episode, the 200th episode special, where Aaron and Michael were actually in it.
Yes.
That was one of my favorite episodes. And you can tell in that they're in this, like, they know this stuff. It's, you know, they love it. Especially, like, you look in the background, some of these shows, like, when they're up in the attic and you see in a box in the corner that said third season of, you know, Young Justice.
Right.
In the corner, where they have, like, these movie posters that was like Batman vs. Superman, The Dawn of Just Us.
No, they definitely, I mean, there's so much love in it. And the thing that I liked about Teen Titans Go as well was that the whole thing felt like such a love letter to fans.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wasn't just them making all these silly references and poking fun at themselves a little bit. Like, one of my favorite running gags in there was when every time they would be like, oh, we have to do something, and how are we going to do this? And Raven would be like, we keep forgetting that I can make portals. And everybody would be like, oh yeah. Like, all these little things that they kept making reference to, that's amazing. But one of my favorite minor references they made, and it warmed the cockles of my cold, dead heart, was there's a scene in which they're fighting with, I think it's Slade, and he, like, knocks Beast Boy against a wall, and Raven gets super concerned and runs over to him, mm-hmm. and there's another scene where they're falling, and Raven catches him, and she's like, ugh, and then she kind of smiles and looks away, you know?
Yeah.
I'm huge in Team Raven, Team Beast Boy. I'm rooting for them, Tara. But, like, it was just little stuff like that that I was like, oh, y'all, group hug.
And, you know, of course, they're looking for the arch nemesis. Who do they find is their biggest arch nemesis from the original series, but Deathstroke. And, of course, like, I, you know, love, they're like, hey, look, it's Deadpool.
Yeah.
And that's so relevant for, like, two big things. One, because of the Deadpool movie that just came out.
Yep.
But
also, sure, Deadpool.
But also because, you know, the idea of Deadpool came, he actually, you know, brought him as, like, a distant cousin of Slade Wilson, but he was Wade Wilson. It was, like, the whole thing. He even modeled, like, the character, the suit and everything after him. So it was...
Well, it's funny, and they acknowledge that, too. And he's like, actually, he should be saying that he's not me.
Right. Because I came out, like, way before him.
Yeah, it was funny. I mean, again, them kind of pointing fun at comics in general. But it was, yeah, that was a nice little reference, too. And mm-hmm. the thing that I liked about it was that, if you remember from the original series, Slade was, like, really a serious villain. And a lot of the things he did was kind of mind manipulation stuff, and it was very dark when he did it. But in this, they managed to keep that, but making it silly. So, like, when he was talking, when he talks about, I'm mind manipulation, they're like, prove it! And he's like, oh my god, what's that behind you? And everybody stops and looks, and he disappears. I mean, it was just, it was so silly, but it worked.
Right.
It actually worked. And one of the things we had talked about before going into the movie was that we always really liked Ron Perlman as Slade Wilson. He really owned that character. And he has such a dark, gravelly, serious voice. So I was a little skeptical of them casting Will Arnett as it. And the only reason I think that it worked was that Will Arnett, the thing I like about his voice is that he always sounds so exasperated. Literally always. So it actually really worked in this context because he just always sounded exhausted with their what would you call it? Ridiculousness?
Yeah. He's like, but what are you guys gonna do? Are you gonna tell some fart jokes? Are you gonna throw some waffles at me and sing a song?
I loved that. And like, I think I saw it twice on the trailer, but in the movie, I still cracked up laughing. What are you gonna do? Annoy me with your waffles? And Cyborg starts pushing him off screen. It was so funny. But, I mean, it had this... It was just a nice movie all around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it did have some touching moments.
It really did.
And it had, you know, obviously full of comedy, like we would come to expect from a Teen Titans Go film. And should we get into the big spoiler?
Yes. If you have not seen the movie yet, give us a couple minutes. Maybe skip ahead a couple minutes. So, there was, of course, an end credits scene, because what doesn't have an end credits scene anymore? The end credits scene is the screen goes black, and all of a sudden it comes into picture comes in, like a fading transmission, and it's the OG Teen Titans speaking into the screen, and they say, we think we found a way back.
Okay, I just got chills all over again.
Oh my gosh, me too. Because, and we're in the theater, and all three of us, my daughter way down in front, and my husband and I, well, all right, my husband wasn't as excited. He's kind of a professional hater. But the two of us, like, we stood up and we're like, oh my god! It was so exciting for us. That is, how long have we been waiting for that?
Well, let's see. It ended, like, in the 90s, so in the...
Well, no.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was early aughts.
Mm-mm.
Oh, man. All right,
I think it ended in 98. To be honest.
That just sounds really early. But you know what? You could absolutely be
well,
right.
Well, I didn't get into it until after college and after college. So, but as Jen's quickly looking that up.
The final episode was 2006. Oh, that makes sense.
What the hell?
Because,
I don't know.
So we started playing World... This is random. But we started playing World of Warcraft in 2004. And one of our friends, Gutty, was super, super into Teen Titans. Mm-hmm. And at the time, he kept trying to get us to watch it because he was like, oh my god, this is like the predecessor to Batman, the animated series, in terms of just having a dark, really good comic series. And we were kind of like, nah. So it wasn't when it ended, that's when he was like, just watch it. And oh my god, we were blown away by it, or I was at least blown away by it and loved it. But that was 12 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
We've been waiting 12 years for, what is it, the 6th season?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Of course, you know, the thing about the show, though, is that they've made several references toward it, like one of the earlier episodes of Fourth Wall, which was pretty much Aaron and Michael's big, like, middle finger to all the people that were bitching about the show about how terrible it is.
I loved that one, by the way.
Oh, I totally did, because it was just like, you know, this is what it is. This is how we're doing it. You know, and so, of course, what happened in that episode, for those who haven't seen it, is a control freak is telling the Titans that, that they might have to reboot this show. And he's like, I've already rebooted you once before. And they're like, what? And so he showed them, like, the original Teen Titans series. And they're sitting there watching it. And they're like, this is, like, so amazing. And when it ended, they're like, but what? It just ended, like, and Starfire's like, but there were so many, like, There's so many unresolved plot holes that haven't been filled. And they're always like, he's like, yeah, I probably shouldn't have canceled that show. And they're like, you canceled that show. And
well, that one was funny too, because they, I mean, it really was a middle finger, because they keep, throughout the series, they keep rebooting themselves and making it more and more ridiculous. Like the one where they're all like Downton Abbey style, drinking tea and like talking all properly. Yeah.
The humor is my, that tie. My brows.
Yes, exactly.
But I mean, but you know, they were talking about, you know, this is, they pretty much said, sorry, and they even said, we're sorry that fans don't like it, but this is who we are. And that just kind of ended it. Like, you know, that's amazing, because they took a big risk doing that, because that could have totally fallen on their faces.
Oh, yeah.
I said, like, it made, I was already watching the show, so it made me like it even more. But then, like, I showed you an episode today before we drove down here, where it was just a couple seasons ago, they actually took one of the first episodes of the original Teen Titans, and they redubbed over it. And it's ridiculous and hilarious. And I wouldn't be surprised if what happened is Aaron and Michael, like, or whoever wrote the script that day, was like, here's the general direction that this is going. Mm-hmm. But you guys just watch the video that we've cut and just go. Because there's too much stuff that was just insane. Like, I can't, it sounds more like an ad-lib comedy than
it does, yes.
Does, like, an actual scripted.
Well, it was more thing. Like Mystery Science Theater 3000 style. Because, mm-hmm. like, it opens and they're like, look how the wind is dramatically blowing my hair. It's so ridiculous. And when he's running in a circle, and he's like, ooh, you can see it. It's like a kite. It's so, his cape, it's so right. Randomly
Oh, also, funny. There was that episode early in first season, Dreams.
Yes.
Where Robin's dream is from the ending of, Trouble in Tokyo. So, I mean, I'm wondering when that happened, if this was their way of being like, to show somebody somewhere that people want Teen Titans to come back.
Mm-hmm.
And they were just kind of like, you know, trying to get the fan base started, and they have it now.
They do.
Obviously, and to make a movie, they'd have to have it.
Right. But part of me wonders, like, I mean, it really, that's a promise. We found a way to come back.
Right.
That's a promise. Which, oh my gosh, and I mean, I guess you could call it the end credits scene heard around the world, because as far as I know, the internet lit itself on fire when that happened. It's been 12 years, at least the Reddit community lit itself on fire, for those fellow Redditors out there. But, I mean, it was such a nice way to end it, and the thing that's funny about it is that, so, the movie comes to an end, if you haven't seen it yet, or if you have, you know, that it comes to an end, and Robin's like trying to think of a message, and they keep trying to get him to roll the credits, and they're like, it's not that kind of movie, Robin, it's not that kind of movie. And finally the screen starts to fade to black, and Robin jumps out and says, kids, ask your parents where babies come from. It was this irreverent, silly, off-the-wall joke, right? And at that point, I wonder how many people were like, okay, apparently this movie is done. So then to have this just complete paradigm shift over to the old school of them, mm-hmm. very seriously, we think we found a way to come back. What?
I think it's like a lot of kids may not have even seen the OG stuff unless their parents are like us.
Right.
Who really liked it and were really into it. And knowing parents my age that I do, there's probably very few.
Right.
To be honest. So as kids are like, well, that looks cool, but what is that?
Mm-hmm. Well, and the funny thing is that our friends went and saw the guy who was super into it. Mm-hmm. His 17-year-old son is also super into the old series. So when they saw it, he was like, oh my God. Like, he was so excited. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's an exciting thing. Now, here's the thing, though, that I can't reconcile, is that you had this Teen Titans Go, which, I mean, I think we can all admit that Teen Titans Go is silly. Mm-hmm. And it's, you can take that word in every which way that silly means, right? I know that some people use it as kind of a pejorative term. Some people use it as a good thing. It's a silly show,
mm-hmm.
right? Teen Titans Go, or Teen Titans was not a silly show. It had silly moments,
right?
But it was not a silly show. It was serious. So, we have a super silly, frivolous show teasing the return of the serious show that literally everyone, not literally everybody, but anybody who with good taste likes and loves, what, 5 months after the reveal of the new Titans show,
the live action one.
Oh, yeah.
Which is busily being lambasted left and right, as it should be. I believe we lambasted it in a previous podcast.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, I think it might have been last podcast. Anyways.
No, it was actually two podcasts.
Yeah, it was two ago. Mm-hmm. It was, yeah. Thank you. But you have all of these. I mean, it's just weird to me that now we're going to have two Titans series. Real one and a piece of shit live action.
Well, and I honestly hope that they still keep Teen Titans going.
Right.
Like, I don't want that one to go. I mean, I don't. If I have to choose, of course I'm going to choose the OG, but I don't want to choose. Like, I still like them both.
Well, and you know the thing about that would be interesting was that I think Teen Titans would be their outlet for, here's the serious story and character progression that we want to do, but every now and then we just want to be silly. Because in Teen Titans, because I really liked those episodes too, in Teen Titans they would have some kind of silly
right, because it's like they were teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And they would have these, well, like, they would have silly moments, but I'm about to make an X-Files reference. Every now and then, in the old school X-Files, they would just do these silly, lighthearted episodes. Like, one of my favorite ones is actually one of their Christmas episodes, where they get stuck in a house that's haunted by Ed Asner and Mary, I think it's Mary Tyler Moore. No, it's not Mary Tyler Moore. Who is it? I can't think of her name right now. Lily Tomlin.
Okay.
And Ed Asner haunt the house.
Hmm.
And it's kind of this turn on the Christmas Carol.
Yeah.
And it's really silly and funny. And it was such a breath of fresh air. Mm-hmm. So I kind of hope that maybe they could find a way to like, oh, we're going to do Teen Titans. But then every now and then we're going to have like a Teen Titans Go style episode where right. it's just frivolity left and right.
Well, I mean, but you know, some of my favorite Teen Titans episodes were some of those. Like, I don't remember what it was called, but it's the one where Robin has to take Kitten to prom is probably my favorite episode. Like, I can watch, I watch that all the time still. It's because it's ridiculous. I mean, this guy, he's a spider for a head, okay? I mean, and Killer Moth is threatening the city, but his daughter Kitten needs a prom date, and she wants the coolest, she wants Robin. So he takes the entire city hostage so his daughter can have an awesome prom date.
See, my favorite Teen Titans episode is the one in which Starfire goes to the future.
Oh, that one was so sad.
It's so sad, but I absolutely love it.
Mm-hmm.
Because the one thing that I liked was that she sees Nightwing, right? Mm-hmm. She gets to see Nightwing. But I loved the idea that all of these characters needed each other,
mm-hmm.
which I guess makes it sound a little codependent when I say it that way. But I loved how, I guess, let me word that a different way. I loved how important their friendship was to their development, mm-hmm. to their growth. I loved that that was such an integral thing to them. And that with, because there was, especially in the beginning of the episode, right, they always kind of treat Starfire as this literal alien, right? Mm-hmm. She's kind of this oddity. She's a little silly. She's a little too touchy-feely with the feelings, right? But ultimately, they needed her.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, it's one of my favorite episodes. Because yeah. even though it's sad, it hits you in the feels.
Yeah, I mean, I like that one, yeah, but it's super sad. Because I look for the ones where it's Starfire and Robin most of the time. Like,
yeah.
Like the one where they get separated and they're all on different planets. And there's the one that, so it's like a really good moment between them, like kind of founding their relationship. Like she kind of makes him almost define the relationship. And he's like, oh, yeah. We don't need to. And she's like, no, seriously, like, we do. Like, what is this? Of course, my favorite part of the whole thing is that, you know, Raven's on this random planet where they're just like, shalom! Just give her grapes and just massaging her back. She's like, all right, I guess I can stay here.
Right.
But there's that. Oh, there's so many of them. There's probably about three or four I watch all the time because it's like a good Robin and Starfire moment. Mm-hmm. And I like that in Teen Titans Go, they've kind of reversed it, that where he's obsessed with her and she's just like, I love you like the brother.
Yes. I liked that one. I liked that. I always like, I'm a huge Raven and Beast Boy
mm-hmm.
fan, so there's not as many good Teen Titans episodes where they really focused on that, especially not in the later season, which is also a pain point for me. But I'm so excited for that series because, again,
I loved that they could be serious, they could be dark, but they weren't broody or gritty. It is not a gritty show. And that's why I think when our friend was first just like, no, this is the successor to the animated series in that it's dark, it's serious, but it's not too serious. Mm-hmm. And they're not taking themselves too seriously.
Which that's what I liked about, you know, Young Justice as well.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. Like, they still had some silly moments because they were kids.
And that Justice League cartoon did that too. They mm-hmm. had the original one. They had a lot of, well, original from the aughts, not the...
We don't talk about Super Friends, all right?
We don't talk about that. No, but I always loved that too, because they do the same thing. They could be very serious and very dark, but they could also have some fun with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because these are ultimately comic book characters.
Right.
Not to, you know, put them on the... I don't know. Not to belittle it, but you know.
No, but you know, and I love, like, my superhero comics, obviously, and I love some of the really deeper tales that they tell, but I also love it when they drop in a joke every now and then, because at the end of the day, it's like, it is a comic. And comic, you know, I'm, like I said, not bullying, but it's comedy is where it comes from, in a way. I mean, I know you like your grimdark demon stuff.
Demons.
But even some of those, like, you'll find, like, some humor.
Yes.
Yeah, it's pretty cool, sprinkled
that
in those.
That was always my favorite thing about Saga, is that Saga was very good about having humor. Even sometimes when it was... Or actually, I should say often, it was gallows humor. It was still funny.
Right, right.
And they still tried to keep it somewhat light and not taking themselves too seriously. Which I'm severely lacking in my life right now.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. We'll talk more about that here in a bit.
Well, you know, like, in my comic situation, like, it is... So, there was this wonderful Teen Titans Go episode where the Young Justice characters... cross in. Have you seen this one?
I have not seen that one.
Oh my god. So Kari Payton does both voices.
Right.
And because they have everybody there, but nobody's speaking except for Kari Payton, who is Aqualad in Young Justice.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the Titans, like, they defeat something, and he comes in, and you know, they're all high-five, and he's like, they see the Young Justice, and they're like, oh my god, I was like, did you see what we did? He goes, yes, but I'm really worried that you're not serious enough. And so Robin's like, we must be really serious. So then they change the entire art style to, like, over the top, broody, and serious.
Oh my god, I need to see this.
And it's like, and it gets to the point, like, you know, they're about to go into a battle, and Starfire is like, but Robin, I need to tell you something. Not now. I'm too broody about this. You know. And you know, and then Raven, she's like, I don't think I can handle it. This demon inside of me is trying to come out. And Cyber's like, but my life, it's over because of where I am. And so then the Young Justice guys come back and they're like, we think you're being a little too serious. And that's kind of where I am in my comics right now. They're just being a little too serious over things that you boil down, it's not that serious. Like the whole doorknobs thing, you know, you got that. And you were talking about this yesterday, you know, Avengers Infinity War, when Iron Man is fighting against, you know, Thanos' children that have come down, and Spider-Man shows up, he's like, hey, Mr. Stark, like, what's going on? What do you do? He's like, aliens from space are trying to steal a necklace from a wizard. You know, at the time, it's like, no, it's actually a very serious thing, but he breaks it down like that. It's like, okay, yeah, it really is kind of ridiculous and silly. And I feel like some of my comics have kind of forgotten that.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, like, you know, in the DC, like, I didn't put this on my list, but, like, I did read Flash. It was boring as shit. I can't.
Was it?
Oh, yeah. Trickster has this strength force, and okay, whatever.
Oh, my God.
Right. That's pretty much.
Like, with the forces. Zen.
Yes. Pretty much.
You missed Carrie trying to find her breathing in her own place.
A little inner peace there.
Inner peace. Yeah, no, I think when I look at my list of stuff that I've read, this, I almost said sprint, I work in an agile shop, everything is super serial, with one exception, and that exception was very confusing to me, but I'm kind of in a similar place. Actually, I'm in a weird place with comics in general right now. So, for the last 2 weeks, my comic that's coming out next week is East of West, and I know if you listen to this show, this is going to shock you. It hasn't come yet. I swear to God, this series is on a slow boat from China. But I just,
We always joke about we should check on Jeff Lemire to make sure he's okay because his stuff is so slow or so sad and just down. And I'm at the point where I think somebody needs to check and make sure this guy still has a pulse. Make sure that he's not in a freaking attic somewhere. Or like that he didn't, oh God, he's not like panhandling in Las Vegas or something like that. I don't
know.
Or
he's in a crack house, you know, just.
Yeah, or that he just packed up all of his shit and went to like Machu Picchu.
Right, because it's for two reasons. One, we really like Jeff Lemire. He's a really good writer.
Love Jeff Lemire.
He tells really good stories. But two, dude, you need to lighten up just like a little bit.
Yeah,
some
can we
smiles.
Have just a little bit of like.
Like, I understand. Okay, so like Royal City, like, I didn't read it, but you know, obviously we've heard Jen talk about it for quite some time. And it's a sad story, and you can't change that. It's a sad story. I get that 100%. Mm-hmm. But then, like, his next one that he teased, you know, he had the little advertisement in the back, looks just as sad. It's like, dude, like.
It looks super sad.
Like, dude, can you find a little bit of a happy place?
Yeah, please, just somebody check on him. But Jonathan Hickman, if you're alive, text someone. Publish the next fucking issue of East of West. The Black Monday Murders are on hiatus. Please throw the girl a bone, huh? But I'm in this weird place right now where all of my series are in like a lull. So everything hits like September 12th or 7th, the 19th. So it's that week when they all hit is like the end of September. So I have like nothing for the next couple of weeks. But there's also like two or three new series from Image that I want to read that all hit in September. So like right now I have like a three comics I think to talk about tonight, but I'm about to get hit by like a deluge. Mm. But if anyone out there listens to anything that's funny or uplifting or not the Factory of Sadness,
I'm telling you, come back to Weapon X.
Well, Victor Creed is gorgeous in that.
It's not just that. It's so damn funny. Oh my God. I mean, all right. So while we're here, because I did bring like, you know, my iPad that has all my comics on it, I have to show you the Can Has Cheeseburger.
Oh my God. Cat I have throw. To see that.
So yeah, I mean, that should bring you over to Weapon X enough. But you're reading something that is funny right now, because we both are, and it's called Mr. and Mrs. X.
Oh my God. Okay. So I feel that I should preface by saying that, oh, also, we are drinking a Loveless. Shout out to Colteras Winery in Palisade, Colorado for providing our liquid courage.
Refreshment,
to
yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I read Mr. and Mrs. X. I got it. And Carrie had asked me, did you read it yet? And no, I didn't. So I'll read it on the train. I read it. I got to the end. And I texted her and I said, what the fuck did I just read? What is going on?
I think my exact words was, I don't think they know either.
I am so... Take it away, Carrie. I want to hear your summary of this episode.
Okay, well, if you remember last time on
previously on Mr. and Mrs. X,
Rogue was phased... She accidentally phased out of his ship, so she's out in deep space. You know, you really can't breathe in space. It's hard. And she gets saved, and she wakes up, and she's in Deadpool's room. And he's, like, trying to take the egg thing from her. And she's like, yeah, thank you for the save, but, like, what the hell are you doing? And so she's basically like, you can't keep the egg. He's like, oh, no, I'm keeping this. Like, I think he was hired for it. But, you know, now Gambit's trying to find her. They locate the signal of where the egg is. And then randomly, like, the Shi'ar that are there... exit stage left, like, quickly. Of course, it's funny when they do, because they have a Shi'ar prisoner, and she says, you know, it's like, I'm about to do something, but it means that we're all going to go, so it's in your hands and good luck. And so she basically throws, like, this portal that only goes to Shi'ar biosignatures. So they all start disappearing, and this is the leader's disappearing. He's like, whoever searched her is so fired, because he's disappearing. And so, you know, Gambit finds her, makes sure she's okay. And he's just like, oh my God, Deadpool's here. He's like, I have issues with Deadpool, because he hasn't gotten over the fact that Rogue kissed him like a while ago. It was a while ago, but he hasn't gotten over that. So they're now fighting over the egg. Deadpool, he's making jibes at Gambit the whole time. It's like, you know, Gambit's just the worst. Am I right? Like, you know, we need to hook up. She's like, okay, like, I, no, like, this is not happening. she's trying to cool it between the two of them because they're basically looking for any reason to pound on one another. Although my favorite phrase in that is, in, you know, they're both saying you can't have the egg. And he's like, why? He's like, but I'm going to make a whole lot of money on it. And he gave him a go, wait, how much money? But I know I can't tell you what happened at the end because, you know, again.
Well, you haven't yet mentioned the baby.
I'm getting there.
Okay.
At the end, so they have the egg and they don't really know what it does. And they're all arguing over it because Deadpool's like, I'm taking it. And they're like, no, we're taking it back to the X-Men. And he's like, no, I'm taking it. Blah, you know, keep going. And then all of a sudden Deadpool's like, someone, like, the egg's broken and I didn't do it. And it cracks open and Deadpool's like, what's inside? Is it a Christmas present for me? He goes, oh my God, yes it is. And Gambit's like, what? And she goes, what am I looking at? And then it goes back to the egg and there is like a little version of Rogue, like a Rogue baby. He reaches out to say, help me. And they're all, and Rogue, I mean, you can see her, she's like, what kind of cruel joke is this? Because if you think about it, she can't have kids.
Right.
You know, she and Gambit know that. But I mean, because even Gambit, he was just like, what? And Deadpool's like, it's like the best day ever. And that's how it ended. And she's like, can you explain the baby to me? Like, I can't.
It's so weird.
Yeah.
I have no idea. The only thing that made me feel better was that when Carrie was like, I don't know what's going on either. So I was like, okay, at least I don't have to go and read. Well, you know, if you would have read these three different X-Men series, you'd know what was going on right now.
Well, first of all, I would never phrase it like that. It's been like, oh, this is a reference back to, you know.
No, I know. Right. That's, I mean, like, that happens a lot in Marvel Comics, too, where I'll be like, what is going on? Or, like, in DC, too, right? What is going on? Okay, well, if you're also reading The Flash and you're reading Justice League, and you're reading this one Batman series, you'll know that this is what all of this is, right? I know you wouldn't word it that way, but it's DC and Marvel wording it that way, essentially, right? So that made me feel a little bit better. That mm-hmm. It wasn't like, okay, I don't have to go and read a bunch of stuff or have Carrie sit there and be like, okay, let me explain all of this to you. But I am confused.
Yeah, and this is really one of those that I really wish, I mean, aside from the fact I love Gambit and Rogue, I really wish it was, like, bi-weekly, if not weekly, instead of monthly, because mm-hmm. Like, you know, what, we got to next another 2-3 weeks now before we can find, 3 weeks now, before we can find out, like, what yeah. is this, what really was this egg thing, and why is everyone, like, ready to kill each other over it, and why does it look like Rogue? Especially because Rogue didn't even touch it that much. Mm-hmm. Really, it was Deadpool and Gambit had their hands on it the most.
Yeah.
So.
I can't even posit a theory or a guess. Like, it's not one of those things where sometimes, you know, like, we're reading stuff and you'll see something and you'll be like, oh, okay, I'm guessing this is what's going on.
Mm-hmm. No.
I got nothing.
No.
Just nothing.
No, it's something that the Shi'ar are trying to protect. You got all these bounty hunters looking for it. The X-Men are like, oh, no, we can need to have it here. Hold on. No idea what it is. Although so far I'm just like, man, this is kind of the worst honeymoon ever.
Right? Well, we knew it couldn't be that easy.
Well, of course not. It's the X-Men.
Right? That's true. Yes. But aren't... Let's see, you're reading another X-Men series as well, though.
I'm reading too many. But
is
the one
Extermination?
The one I'm reading, yeah, the one I read today, Extermination. This is, I think what this is, Seth, go ahead and laugh at me. I think what this is the miniseries leading up to the original 5 X-Men that have been here for, like, way too long now, going back to their time. And so far, the only good thing that's come out of this is that Bloodstorm is dead. Praise Jesus, Allah,
yes,
whoever.
Yes, queen!
But it's gotten, it's weird, alright? I don't know how to explain it. Because I don't know if we said this last time about Cable, that Cable was there. Which I was really confused, because last time I checked, Cable was dead, like, again. You know, he keeps dying, I don't understand, he keeps coming back.
I can't keep track of it, don't look at me.
I think it's because of the time jumps, I'm not even sure. But, yeah, so he's back and he was trying to help them because Ahab from the future has come back to him with the Hounds trying to kill the OG X-Men.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's trying to protect them from that, but then Cable suddenly gets killed by this mm-hmm. hooded figure, and this hooded figure knocks out Bobby, young Bobby, and takes him away. And then you find out that hooded figure is a young Cable.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, so young Cable just killed old Cable. And so it's like...
As one does, it's like Looper.
And so Seth's like, oh, it's like from an alternate universe. And like, all right, you've already lost me. So in this latest issue, you know, they're trying to figure out, you know, basically... I could think it was a Monty Python bitching and arguing about who killed who, because that's what it kind of feels like everyone's doing. They're trying to figure out who's killed what, like where Ahab is, did he go anywhere, and Rachel's having Vietnam flashbacks in the corner. She's like, I can't be a hound again, I can't be a hound again. Like, oh, okay. And then young Cable shows up and he kind of shows his begin and runs off with Warren. And all you see is, like, he's sitting there drinking tea. I'm not lying. Sitting there just drinking some tea. My Warren's, like, hooked up to this machine, and you see that they're trying to slice off his wings.
His fire wings.
And the whole time, you see blood, like, coming, and you hear him screaming, and Cable's just sitting drinking tea. He's like, you brought this on yourself. Like, I don't know what's going on, people. Unless, the only thing I can think of is that maybe this young Cable is reverting these X-Men to back how they were so that they can go back. Because I always wondered that with Warren's wings.
Right.
Like, seriously, how can you go back? Because you don't have their wings. You know, it might be weird.
Right.
Professor X is like, dude, like...
Didn't you have wings?
Like, you went to bed with, like, feathers and now you have fire? Like, what happened last night? Type thing. So that's something I can think of right now. I guess I really don't understand why we need to have this whole series on them leaving, because they can just really fucking go.
Right. They could just fuck right off, and I don't think anybody would be sad.
No, I mean, it's kind of to coincide from when X-Men Blue ends, and I think that this will tie up to exactly when X-Men Blue and X-Men Gold ends. And X-Men Gold's gone off on a weird tangent. Like, I really think what's happened is that these guys were told... These series are ending, by the way, but this is when they're ending, so, whatever. So, like, and I think Guggenheim, because he already finished the arc with Kitty, he might have had other ideas, but now he has to make up, like, new ones, because they're very random.
Right.
They don't seem to be going anywhere, like, they're not that important. They really feel like filler.
Excellent.
I see what you did there.
Sorry.
That's awesome.
You're welcome.
It's all good. I don't want to talk about X-Men Red. I really don't. I will say this.
Do you want to point to the spot in your brain where X-Men Red touched you?
All right, I'll tell you where X-Men Red touched me.
Oh, dear.
So, they're with Namor, all right, who I already think is a terrible character to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
So, Jean has created a new Cerebro, but since it's under the sea, they have named it Cerebro.
That's actually kind of amazing. Under the Cerebro.
I would think that, except that all I can do is roll my eyes, because it's Jean Grey.
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah.
That's fair. I understand that. That's cool.
Just because the whole time when they named it, you could totally see them going,
Do you get it? Yes, actually, I can't
as
see
we're
that.
Winking.
Yeah.
Like, really, really big.
Well, it reminds me of that, again, Monty Python sketch. You know what I mean? Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. You know what I mean? Exactly. Yes, it's that. Oh my god. So, okay, I'll add to the confusion here because I'm a little confused. I'm reading Justice League Dark.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. It's all for you, Larry. Larry kind of convinced me to do this.
Okay, that's not totally true. You also saw Zatanna and
Swamp Thing, and I was like, yes, queen! Also...
And...
Detective Chimp.
Yes.
I kind of have a thing for Detective Chimp. I'm sorry. Not like that kind of a thing, okay? But, like, I don't know why Detective Chimp doesn't bother me. However, one of the main characters in this is Man-Bat, who can fuck right off out of the DC Universe for all I give a shit. Please have another glass of wine so I'm not the only person drinking two glasses tonight.
Sorry.
Sorry. Yeah, he's, look, this shit. So,
the shit with the shit is the shit.
Oh, my God. It's just so bad. So... And I don't really understand where they're going with this. The idea is that, so they've already said that magic originally entered the human world through theft, more or less, right?
I'm already bored.
Yeah, so they're kind of hinting that the original magic of peoples are going to be coming back, like to take it back, and that's why everything is going to hell in a handbasket. Why we're bringing in Man-Bat? I would love to have been in the staff meeting where they were like, oh God,
I know the perfect member for this team. Man bat. And I would love, and I would just like to have the staff meeting where you hit people with the staff who went, yes, man bat.
By the way, that was Teen Titans Go joke.
See, Teen Titans Go reference.
See, we're bringing it around full circle.
Full circle, just keeping it going all night tonight.
If you haven't, if you don't watch the show, you haven't seen that episode, just go look up staff meeting. Seriously.
Staff meeting, yeah, it's
you,
amazing.
Yeah, it's really all you need.
It's really all you do need in life. So anyways, they kind of, they tie, and I'm sure it's going to be important, but they have young Diana. She came across these witch women who tried to attack her, and they branded her somehow or something. I don't know if it's a dream or what the hell's going on with that. But
ODC.
So, and Zatanna obviously kind of has an idea of what's going on here. Somebody needs to, right? So, the two things that are going on in this episode is that they go to see Nabu.
Oh, God.
Yeah, anytime that comes out, right? And at first they show up to talk to him, and it's something Kent. I cannot think of his first name right now.
Oh, yeah, I know exactly who you're talking about.
You know
about.
Who I'm talking about. Not Clark Kent.
No.
Kent.
I saw Young Justice.
Yep. So they go to see Nabu, and Nabu takes Wonder Woman and Zatanna off to this other world and to talk to them. And it's revealed that he is the actual Nabu. Kent has been dead for who knows how long. This is actually Nabu. So now they're trapped in this alternate dimension while his evil plan is going to be released back on Earth. Mwahahaha. Insert dark laughter here. But the thing, so one of the reasons that I decided to read this series was that I like Zatanna, she cool, but I came for Swamp Thing. So they've been kind of hinting that Swamp Thing knows something is up and there's problems with Swamp Thing. And there's always been this thing with Swamp Thing that as the avatar of the green, in fact, in his series, they kind of established that he's not actually Alec Holland anymore. He's kind of like the memory of Alec Holland and with this avatar of the green. So at one point he disappears, and of course Constantine, like Mephistopheles, see what I did there, pops in, and they start talking, and Constantine says, "You tell the super friends your secret yet, or are you saving the reveal for when they really started to count on you?" I think somehow they're gonna say that the magic is either corrupting the green, or maybe there's something, again, if you are listening to me say this and you're like, oh, well, it's because you didn't read this series, please clue me in on this one, that I have a feeling, he starts talking about how Alec Holland is, like, any even memory of being Alec Holland is gone now, and that the green will be better without him. So I don't know if the green itself is being corrupted or if Swamp Thing is somehow being corrupted by when he tried to touch, not the world tree, but this magic tree thing that basically is the world tree. So, but I'm sitting there reading this and I'm like, what the shit is going on? And I gotta talk with Larry about it because Larry is like, this is so good.
He was?
Yes! He's loving this! And I can't figure out... Wait, did he... Oh, no. I just got a text and thought, oh, my God, is Larry listening to us record right now as we speak?
That'd be amazing. That'd I don't know
amazing.
How, but...
Get on here, Larry. It basically... The interesting thing is that now we have Man-Bat and Detective Chimp.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, but you know what? I like Detective Chimp. I'm Team Chimp. They're locked back at this, they're locked back at this tower thing. I guess what I'm getting around to laboriously is that I still don't understand where this is going. And there's so many things that keep getting, that are happening or being said, and all I can think is, am I supposed to understand what's going on here? And the answer is, I don't know. So again, if you have some like, oh, hey, yeah, if you would have read this one series, dummy, you'd know what this is, please clue me in. I am all ears.
Well, did you finish reading Constantine or did you quit that like a while ago?
Yeah, I quit that one a while ago. Shit.
Well.
Yeah.
That could have your answers. Maybe you can find some trades for the episodes, issues you don't have.
Maybe. Yeah, all right, let me go and look right
so
now.
So I have to say, like, every single time that you, like, I hear Detective Chimp, the first thing that comes to my mind is the theme song from the Banana Splits.
One banana, two banana, three banana, four.
I didn't ask you to sing it.
I'm sorry.
The show was terrible.
I'm sorry. It sounded like it. I think everyone could agree that was... Oh, man, that song stuck in my head all night.
Oh, yeah.
Tra-la-la-la-la-la-la.
Okay. The only thing that gets the things out of heads is Yellow Submarine, and nothing trumps Yellow Submarine.
Oh, God. I don't like Yellow Submarine, though.
Oh, see, I love everything by the Beatles, so...
Oh, I think I'm... Okay, and also, by the way, I did read all of Hellblazer. There's only one issue, the final issue, that I didn't read.
Oh, it's over?
Da-da-da-da!
It's over?
I guess they got bored with it. It was fucking weird, so...
Well, maybe that final issue.
God damn you.
The final issue might have what you need.
Maybe it's heading for Venus. No, it wraps up the story of the freaking guy who came back and... Get the fuck out. Anyways, sorry, Tim Seeley. Not your best work. So...
Did Tim Seeley, like, if you listen to this, which I know you don't, but if anyone who knows him does, come back to Nightwing, please.
You know, Tim Seeley will forever have a soft spot in my heart for what he did with G.I. Joe and a few other things, but, sir, Constantine was not Strong's work. And I'm only saying that because I've had two glasses of wine. But, okay, I had Justice League Dark, and then I had, I'll skip ahead actually to the Factory of Sadness, Royal City.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the Cleveland Browns.
Oh, no. No, not them too. But that's just too painful. And as I learned from a friend of mine, you don't talk about that. But Royal City has come to an end. It was such a nice ending. It felt a little too buttoned up, but it was still...
Okay, so I'm dying to know. Did the brother kill him?
No.
Okay.
He did not. It was just an accident. Awful accident combined with alcohol, drugs, mm-hmm. and a headache. He drowned. It was just terrible. But all of these people wrestling with this guilt
mm-hmm.
around him. And it was so nice because in the end of the series, everybody says goodbye to him in their own way.
Mm.
So, you know, the mom has now gotten over her guilt, right? Because she and the dad have kind of come to this understanding. And so she sees the priest version of Tommy, and like, you know, she says something about how, I don't think I need to see you anymore, and he's like, no, you don't, and he leaves. And the sister kind of mends her marriage with her husband, and she looks over her shoulder and she sees little Tommy in the hallway, and he's like, you're gonna be okay now, and he leaves. And the main character, Pat, who was the author who had stolen his brother's stories, he's like, I'm going to write my own book now. And he lets him go. And the daughter lets him go. And everybody just slowly but surely lets their version. And the one that got me so much was Richie, the druggy, messed up brother. He's in AA.
Mm.
And he stands up and he says, I'm a gambler, I'm an alcoholic, and I'm a drug addict. And from the doorway, his also fucked up version of Tommy is standing there and he's like, good luck, and disappears, which is so nice.
Oh my god,
ugly crying, not even sorry. And unfortunately, you'd think that I would have learned my lesson after that was the 14th issue. After 14 issues, you'd think I'd learn my lesson and not read this comic book on the train, because then I look like some freak who's crying at my phone like my boyfriend's breaking up with me or something. And it was so nice. It was so sad. And now, I don't know what I'm going to do without this monthly dose of sadness.
That's okay. Lemire's coming out with something new.
He is. It's called what? It's called Family Tree. And all I know is that it has this beautiful picture of a little girl with a tree coming out of her back.
Yeah, but she looks very sad.
She looks very sad. I can already tell it's going to be happy fun times from Lemire. There is no happiness. Somebody check on this man. I don't know. So I'm really excited for it, and I will definitely read it. But I was really, it was funny to me because as I was reading the end of it, and as they're all letting go of Tommy, and it's this nice moment, I had this moment of,
oh man, now I have to let go of Tommy too. I have to let go of this whole family now.
You know, and I was actually asking this to my mom recently. I was like, you know, have you ever like finished a book? Because, you know, you get to a point in a book where like, okay, I'm just ready for this to be over.
Yeah.
But then when you finish it, you're kind of sad to say goodbye to it.
Yeah.
That's kind of like what you're experiencing. Yeah, it's just like, oh.
I've had that with... I mean, I've had that with so many things. With TV shows.
Well, the TV show thing, I think some of it's, you know, that. But some of it's also, it's like, well, now I'm going to watch, you know?
Right.
Because it's... Cause I think they call it the binge hole.
Yes. This
hole, like, what else am I going to do? But yeah, but I think it's interesting that you're like, because they all let go of Tommy, now you have to work on letting him go too. It's, I almost wonder if he like, that was like the purpose of it, which would be kind of cool.
It was kind of, because I was like, oh man, now I have this like little mourning period. And as I said, I'm in this weird state of like no comics for, I think almost 4 weeks. I'm not going to really have any new comics. So, I mean, I still have one more to discuss after we hop back over to Carrie, but yeah, it was kind of sad. I was, well, shit. Hurry now. I'm sure I'll find something. With Detective Chimp.
My God.
So, because we're doing this live, we're doing it live! I don't have show notes. So, what else are you reading, Miss Honey?
Oh, well, I didn't read my other X-Men stuff that have come out. Because, like, I think it was this X-Men Blue.
Because
like,
you respected yourself?
I was like, I can't deal with X-Men Blue and that shenanigans right now. So I read Nightwing. So I don't know how this has happened. All right, so it's an annual. All right.
Okay, we all know our feelings on annuals because you've listened to this podcast regularly.
But it's annual number one.
Okay.
This has been going on since 2016 because it's part of the rebirth. So it's been there since 2016. Yeah. Yeah.
So are they starting over with the annuals?
No. I don't even know why this was an annual. Because it's a continuation of the story that just finished. And, you know, usually annuals would be like this little thing, like maybe like behind these, what was really going on, you know, this extra little thing, but then it ends. It's like, find out next issue what's going on with this. I'm like, why'd you make this an annual? Just make it officially number 49.
Thicker? Like, is it a double issue?
Hold, please.
Your call is important to us. One banana, two banana, three banana, four.
Oh my god, okay, I gotta hurry up.
Years ago,
No, it's not. It's 41 pages. It's like 10 more pages than normal.
So it's like a one and a third issue? I don't know. I don't know why they made it an annual. Ask your fucking DC why they did.
No, it's Benjamin Percy, so I don't know.
Who the hell is Benjamin Percy?
Oh, he's the guy who wrote Green Arrow for a while.
Oh.
And Benjamin Percy, he wrote Teen Titans, like the rebirth Teen Titans when it was good.
Oh, okay.
Before, you know, now Lobo's daughter or something is in the picture. Mm-hmm. And I've kind of been like, peace.
Yeah.
We're done here. I can barely explain what this has been about. It's been this is really a testament. It's a political statement, which mm-hmm. is, I know, Benjamin Percy. Who could have seen that coming if you've read Green Arrow?
I am shocked, personally.
But it's an interesting one. It's really one about, it's about fake news. But it's in a way that it's actually going into about how all of our information we get, we just assume everything is correct that we see on the internet, we get in our phones, or we see on the news. Mm-hmm. And so, basically, like this kind of villain that's like also a virus or something, you know, was kind of tapping into this and exploiting it by, you know, getting into people's minds and being able to get information out of them, which then enables them to be blackmailed and everything else, and they're able to publish that kind of information. And so this one's like, you know, he ended the threat in Bloodhaven, but now they're seeing some things going on in Gotham and they're trying to figure that out. So he's teamed up with Barbara to try to kind of figure out what's going on with there. Yeah, so it's funny that you make that face. She was making this like excitement face that he and, you know, Barbara are together. But he and Vicky Vale are like flirting like crazy.
What the shit?
So I'm like,
Okay. Okay, first off, what closet did they dust her out of?
Okay, so...
Oh, good.
You know, like, she and Bruce had a thing, you know, and I know Bruce doesn't look that much older than Dick these days, but he is, all right? He's at least 20 years older. That's just nasty. No. So, like, she's, like, seriously flirting with him, and he was just kind of, like, you know, wink, wink, nudge, nudge back. But then he's like, but if I'm with Barbara, like, I just feel like I'm at home. I'm like, would you guys just get together or not already?
Jesus Christ, just fuck already. Good God.
You know, you've actually, you know, kept it in your pants. Now, for several issues, I'm pretty damn proud of you. So
he's going through withdrawals. He's scratching at his legs. That's why Vicky looks good.
No one complimented my butt, like, all day. I don't know what to do. So they're trying to, like, unearth this threat, but what's happened is that the news organizations have been put on lockdown and taken over by this virus threat, and it's like they have this new news organization, and they're putting out all this fake news, except that's really literally not going on, but people are believing it, and it's creating fear. So what this really has kind of been about is about how, because even the virus says that, he's like, the news isn't for information anymore, it's, we use it to keep the people in power, because then everybody else is in fear. And like, yeah, they, you know what?
That hits the nail a little squarely on the head.
It's been like a discussion for decades, like at least 2 decades about, you know, right. that the news is not like how it was. Because like even Nightwing brings up a Walter Cronkite, you know, how trustworthy he was. Because he reported the news. And now it's like all sensationalism. It's all on social media and we all get it from our phones and we don't even fact check. And even our fact checks may not even be that good of fact checks because, again, it's on the internet. It's not always true. So it's been a really interesting study into that about, you know, manipulating information to manipulate fear and manipulate people into certain power.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, well, that's actually really rather interesting. But I don't know why this was an annual because it wasn't, nothing was, you know, the story's still going. It wasn't resolved. And it's going into next issue, official issue Nightwing. So if you're going to do this, like, just don't make an annuals. Just, you know, just be like, hey, it's a supersized issue. Move on.
Right. Interesting.
Yeah. I'll just say, like, this current arc, though, like, as weird as it is, it's probably one of the best I've read in a while because it's really focused on, because, like, Barbara constantly making fun of him in this arc about, you know, not knowing anything about technology. And he was like, are you really going to hipster talk me right now? And he said hipster-splain me right now. And he said he hated technology. He's like, all I'm going to do is punch technology in the face. Because his big argument is, it's like, we are so tethered to our phones and this technology that we're not seeing the world around us. And we're just accepting everything that this technology is telling us is true. And he's like, I hate technology because it's not a person. I'm not getting anything verification. I'm just accepting this faceless thing that's true. So it's been a very interesting.
That is interesting.
Yeah, because like he's like, I'm not, he's, you know, it's Dick Grayson. He's like, no, I'm not social media. Like, you know, he has his own like gym now in Bloodhaven. It's all word of mouth. Because he's like, no, I'm not going to put stuff on the internet. It's like, no, I'm not going to be on Facebook. And no, I'm not going to tweet stuff. It's like, no, like, this is a gem. You work out. We're not going to do this. And it's partly because he's not interested in it. And he doesn't know how to do it. But it's also that he's like, no, like, we rely too much on this. So we're all looking out, was looking here, not looking up here.
Right.
Which I've heard these studies done before, but I've kind of enjoyed this even, like I said.
The Wall-E argument, if you will.
Yeah, right. You know, man, that movie. So many.
Yes.
So many jabs in there.
The thing that always makes me think of Wall-E is that, and I don't know if anybody else has noticed this, but I've noticed especially younger millennials will be walking through the grocery store on video chat with people.
Oh my God, I've never seen that.
Oh my God, all the fucking time.
I hate
talking on video, where like I can hear your conversation, I can hear both sides of the conversation now. Terrible.
Like, there was even that scene, you know, in Jumanji 2, where she's on her phone video chat with her friend and the teacher, and the friend's like, some creeper standing by your desk, and it's the teacher, and like, are you on video chat? Well, yeah, like, I'm already done with my test. Like, you understand about awareness? And she's like, awareness of what? That's just what's become.
Mm-hmm.
We're not aware of anything because we're like Wall-E. We're just looking right at this. You know, and like when Wall-E accidentally bumps
the one lady, and all of a sudden she's like, oh my god.
She's like, when do we have this?
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
And the guy, he's like, when do we get a pool? You know, just, we're not far from the, I've not seen the video chat thing. Oh my god.
Oh yeah.
I hate, like, when people call me, I'm in the grocery store, like, I send it to voicemail and I text them, like, I'm in the store, I'll call you back later.
Exactly. There's literally nothing that you have to talk about right now that's that important.
Right. Like, if it's, like, seriously important, like, text me back and then, like, we'll figure out something so I can, you know, call you or whatever. But, yeah, no, we're in a grocery store. Nobody needs to hear my conversation.
No, and if it had only been, like, two people, I would be like, you know, it's not hyperbolic. It's a regular thing.
Oh, my favorite, though, is people talking on the phone in waiting rooms.
And they're
not doing, like, you know, the talking voice where it's like, hey, I'm in the waiting room, like, can we talk later? No, it's like full-on conversation. I'm like, dude, I don't need to know this. Nobody does. And people are looking at them, they're like, what? I'm like, it's like, self-awareness.
Right.
Awareness.
And at the risk of going down a rabbit hole here, there was a really cool thing on NPR. They were talking about why we pay so much attention to other people's phone calls. And they were saying that generally, non-video talk people, that when you hear somebody having a phone call, you're only hearing one side of the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
It triggers that part in our brain that's like a mystery, that the same
thing
as a mystery.
To solve it.
So we immediately start tuning into it, and we are more drawn to half conversations because we're trying to plug in the other pieces of information.
Makes sense.
So it's why we actually listen more, because they were talking about like how distracting it is and why.
That's interesting, actually.
It was super. I was listening to it, and I was like, oh, that explains so much. Because I take the train every day. And
yeah, because like you hear people talking to each other, you totally tune that out. You don't care about that.
No.
You hear people on the phone, it's like something that's all you can hear. You're like, oh my god, why are you so loud?
Well, yeah, especially the people who talk like it's the 90s and somebody's going through a tunnel. I couldn't get the vacation days off! Good. Cool. Christ.
Good for... Sorry, bro.
Sorry, you're having a rough day, man. Yeah, pretty much.
Can you just not even right now?
Yeah, so that actually sounds like it's a good social observation from him, though. That's kind of good.
Yeah, I mean...
Yeah.
So, like I said, like, I'm enjoying it. I'm curious where it's going to go. And I'm really curious if Knighton's going to kind of go in this direction. Because he's been kind of like... Almost like we don't know where Nightwing is going, and maybe that's why they're bringing Benjamin Percy in. It was like, and one thing, Benjamin Percy, I loved what he did in Teen Titans. He brought in humor, so great what he did, and he didn't really bring in like any serious messages into it. Green Arrow, obviously, he did. Whoever the girl's taking it over now, it's toned it down a little bit, but like in Nightwing, and I don't want to be totally like, let's really dive deep into like what's going on with these certain messages right now, but I like this broader scope of things about like that we're too hooked on technology, because he even talks about how Batman's too hooked on technology and that Batman relies on way too much to do stuff, and he's very much like by the book, not by the book, but like almost the seat of his pants, you know, because he's got that hot button all, so it's all off the seat of his pants.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So that'll be interesting. As long as we don't bring the Court of Owls back, it'll be good.
I'm still bitter about that Talon series.
I'm sorry.
Look, it started and it was so awesome, and I'm gonna have to look and see who it was now. But it started and Scott Snyder started it. Mm-hmm. And it was actually not a bad... Don't you owe me,
well,
mouth.
No, I'm just like, that's why you like it. Scott
I
Snyder.
I love it. It was Scott Snyder. And for being what it was a little bubblegums, not the right word, because it wasn't like light and fluffy, but it was kind of, I don't know how to describe it, but it was, you know, it was kind of interesting. And all of a sudden, James Tynion IV, I think it was. Yeah, all of a sudden, it's interesting, and then it takes a sharp turn, like it found a spider under its chair. And I'm like, what the hell? This became just absolute nonsensical garbage. And it was because Scott Snyder was just helping the series get off. So he does, like, the first three or four issues, the first arc.
Yeah.
And then it changes over, and oh my god, it was some garbage. So whenever you say the Court of Owls now, I'm always just like,
town.
Well, although, like, he took down the whole parliament of owls, which really made me roll my eyes when that happened. I was like, oh, a parliament. Haha. Aren't you clever?
Haha. Don't you see what they did there?
Yeah, right? Night, wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
See?
Right?
We're smart and we looked something up. Yeah, pretty much. So, speaking of my darlings, because I do love me some Scott Snyder, I also love me some Colin Bunn. And Colin Bunn is writing a new horror series, and I was telling Carrie on our drive down here that the thing that I'm really excited about with it is, because if you're saying to yourself, oh, another horror series from Colin Bunn, how exciting. The thing that I like about it is that it's going to be a 5-issue arc, or series, limited edition, so, or limited release. So, I like it that he has a beginning, a middle, and an end clearly already mapped up, so we're not going to have one of those things where he gets to issue 18 and he's like, and then this happens, and this guy shows up, and then somebody's a pirate. It's going to have a very clear story. So it's called Cold Spots, and borrowing from the Sixth Sense type of style where people get really cold when ghosts are around. It's about a man who's been hunted. He's been hired to hunt down this older, I'm guessing he's kind of a gangster guy, his granddaughter. And the man, I'm already calling it right now, the man is the little girl's dad. The gangster guy is hiring this guy who he banished from his house because I think there was a romance between him and the gangster guy's daughter. And he wants to find his granddaughter. And he says she has your talent for seeing things. And apparently, from the description of it, it sounds like whenever she's around, people start to see ghosts. There's a really effective scene at the end of the series, at the end of the issue, where the guy stops at a gas station and he asks, you know, he's asking for directions. And the guy at the gas station's like, oh yeah, sure, you know, gives him directions. And as our main character leaves, the gas station guy suddenly gets cold and he sees someone in like a shadow inside of the store and he's like, oh, thank God you're back. You know, I'm so sorry. I never meant for things to get under control. I knew, or out of control. I knew you'd forgive me. And the next scene we see him frozen solid on the ground.
Oh, jeez.
Oh yeah, it's some pretty gruesome shit. So, I have a feeling that shit is going to get a little real in this series, and I'm already super intrigued by it. So I'm really excited for it. The first issue starts off with a hell of a bang, and whoever's doing the art, the way that they're handling the shadows, it is quite lovely. So I am really excited for a Cullen Bunn, but I'm also excited for a Cullen Bunn short horror series. I think I said a while back, like in one of our first episodes, one of my favorite series of all time was Scott Snyder. He did two series that I really liked. He did one called Witches with a Y, and it was phenomenal, and it was a short run, and it was heartbreaking. And then he did another one that was Under the Sea, and gosh darn it, I can't think of it.
Under the Sea.
Under the Sea, Brio. Brio? Sorry, Brio. Hi, I got it out the third time. He did this series, and it was really good, too. I know that Larry and Carrie make so much fun of me for my hipster comics not lasting for a long time, but I really like the guys who come in, tell a story, and they're done.
Right, right.
Shots.
I totally get it.
Isn't that amazing artwork?
I know.
Mark Torres is the guy doing the art, and man, it is good. Me gusta. Do you have anything else these 2 weeks?
No, it really was kind of a light couple of weeks, to be honest.
Too.
Next week,
East of West hasn't released yet.
I mean, next week I'm supposed to have like a whole bunch of stuff.
Oh, really?
A whole bunch of DC stuff, like Flash, Justice League, Deathstroke. Apparently, this is the final, like, Maury Povich.
Oh my God.
Episode.
Just pull the fucking Band-Aid off. Either he is or isn't. If it turns out that, oh no, Bruce was always Damian's dad, I'm gonna shit. I'm not even reading the series.
I can pretty much tell you that's what it's gonna be.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
they wasted your time.
Especially since this arc takes place before Tim Drake came back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Big shock.
Mm-hmm. I almost feel like this arc, in a way, like, it's kind of fun, but they're using it to fill time while they're figuring out the next thing Deathstroke's gonna do.
That could be.
Which sucks. Kind of does. But, alright. Well, we are going to sign off here from the lovely Hotel Valencia in San Antonio, Texas. If you've never been to San Antonio, it is, for what it's worth, it is my favorite city in Texas. It's just, it's a very unique city.
Also a big comic book town.
Right. Yeah.
Not at all.
No. No. I mean, I'm sure there are some comic shops here, but...
I'm sure there are even people here who've heard of comics before.
Right, but, you know, there's not a Comic-Con here.
San Antonio Comic-Con, you know, it's like the biggest one in the world. But that's San Diego.
That's San Diego. Wrong San, yeah.
Wrong Saint.
Nice try.
I tried.
All right, well, we do thank you guys for tuning in and listening to us. As always, you can find us on yellingaboutcomics.com. You can also subscribe to us on iTunes and Google Play. You can find the website also on social media at Yell About Comics. Jen is at Jen Bozier, and I am at Crunchy Chocobo. We're also on Facebook at Yelling About Comics. And with that, so we're going to drink some more wine, and I'm going to say good night and good luck.
Cheers.
Hey, I'm stopping them shenanigans. Love getting into shenanigans.